1-800-618-8255. 1-800-618-8255. First-time callers, area code 702-727-1222. Or the wildcard line at 702-727-1295. This is the CBC Radio Network.
And we own the night or evening, whatever day part it happens to be. My guest is Bud Hopkins. And as the man just told you, those are the telephone numbers. The telephone lines are now open. Bud is our nation's, I believe, premier UFO investigator. I'm honored to have him on the program. Bud, are you there?
I certainly am.
Okay.
And if I may just make a comment, because we do live in the real world, too, with this, all the rest of this, I'm sort of astonished at the heavy-duty right-wing bias of the news reports we're getting. It's really quite a new program. It isn't so much news as a little sermonette about how bad anything liberal is. I'm surprised. But anyway, I don't want to short-circuit what we're talking about. But we do live in the real world, and these other things are important to us, too.
They really are. And does the twain ever meet, Bud?
Oh, yeah.
It does.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, the twain meets in the sense that these experiences, and we're again dealing with the whole abduction phenomenon, these experiences have such powerful effects on people's lives that there's no way that your day-to-day existence is not affected very subtly by what's happened to you. Now, just to give you a quick example, if these experiences have happened in childhood, and that's where they seem to always start, versus abducted as a little child, and you're 5 years old and you wake up and you can't move, you're totally paralyzed, and you feel there's some strange figure that's come out of the closet or whatever with its huge black eyes, and you feel yourself floating or whatever, and you don't remember all of the experience. You come back with a cut on your leg that wasn't there. Maybe you're upside down in your bed, or maybe your pajamas are no longer on. They're on the floor or something, and all the signs of physical problems. And you start calling out for help for your parents, and your mother says, "You just had a bad dream. Get back in bed." And you try to say it wasn't a dream, it was real.
Right.
What happens, of course, is a terrible kind of split develops between the child and his or her sense of trust of adults. And if the adults begin to feel maybe something like this really is happening, they begin to feel a tremendous sense of impotence, of helplessness in protecting your own families. And much of this can remain unspoken. And it does not help anybody in your day-to-day existence, whether you're talking about your first-grade teacher or your friends at school. You're afraid to let them know that these strange things are happening to you, which you think, am I crazy? Is this me? What is this?
Sure. All right, but one other thing. You brought up politics, so one question, then we'll go to the phones, and that is, this administration, they've revealed an awful lot about the nuclear testing and a bunch of other baloney that's gone on. What kind of hopes do you have that they're going to release information or what they know about UFOs?
Well, my hopes are slender, sad to say. I mean, we have been hearing day after year after year after year that this is the year and they're going to come clean and so on and so forth. I honestly don't see how they can do that without really terrifying the country. They've put themselves in a completely terrible position by the government cover-up program, because by denigrating the experiences of literally millions of people, they're really saying, you didn't have these experiences. You either made them up, you're a liar, or you're mentally ill. It didn't happen. Some problem psychologically. This is, of course, very much like on the national scale what I was describing within a family.
Sure.
Where the parents are telling the children, this didn't happen to you. You just had a dream, and the child knows it wasn't a dream. The people who have had these experiences know that the government is lying to them. And, of course, it means that they have no place to go for help, although we're trying to supply that as best we can with our limited resources. Numbers of researchers and mental health professionals are turning around to do this. But in the meantime, to help people as best they can. Enormous damage, and of course, if they admit now after years of lying about it, as I said, I wouldn't want to be in the bond market when this happens. So they're really in a spot.
Right. All right. Let's take some phone calls on our toll-free line. You're on the air with Bud Hopkins. Good evening. Where are you calling from, please?
Portland, Oregon.
Portland, Oregon. All right. Go ahead.
Well, I had a recent experience, and I was just wondering how familiar this is. Not too long ago, I had just gone to bed with my fiance, and it was quite late, it was about midnight, and I felt as though something had entered my room,
mm-hmm.
and I opened my eyes, or tried to open my eyes, and my vision started to just kind of blur, mm-hmm. and then my hearing went out, and I was completely paralyzed.
Mm-hmm.
And all I really do remember seeing is something kind of dark, and not too huge, but kind of large.
Mm-hmm.
And then I remember trying to yell or scream for my fiancé, and all I remember being able to do is kind of mumble and groan a little bit. Mm-hmm. And then not too long after that, he was shaking me, trying to, as if he was trying to wake me up.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that had happened, I still couldn't move or hear or anything, and then there was like this loud wind in my ears,
mm-hmm.
and then I was able to get up and scream and tell him to turn on the lights,
mm-hmm.
and that's basically all I remember, except for that the next morning I woke up and had a bruise across my shoulder that hadn't been there before.
Yeah. Well, this is something that should definitely be looked into, and we have some people in Portland. You're very fortunate to be in a city where there's a very sensitive investigator whose name I don't want to give over the air here. This is what I would suggest you do. If you write to me, this is the address for anyone who wants to describe the experience. Just write to me, care of IF, just the initials IF. It stands actually for Trudis Foundation, but just say IF.
Okay.
Box 30233.
Okay.
And that's New York, New York. And the zip is 10011.
Okay.
Now, if you write to me, and you, we will put you in touch with a very skilled and helpful and very, very warm person, an investigator in the Portland area who has had these experiences herself. And she has a support group and people who can be of help. But your experience should very definitely be looked into.
All right.
Well, I have another question. Does this usually happen because not too long before that I had had kind of a sighting. I'm not sure exactly what I'd seen, but it was definitely something not usual or out of, you know, kind of...
All right. Listen on the radio for us, please, ma'am. Is that typical sighting and experience?
It's not necessary. Many people have these experiences without remembering a sighting or without having had a recent sighting. According to the Roper survey, it would suggest that perhaps more people have had abduction experiences than have had UFO sightings. So we used to think of the abduction as a kind of a bizarre, very minor aspect of the whole phenomenon, but now I think it's, of course, the central purpose, and UFOs are, as it were, the getaway car. And as I pointed out, we spent originally, before we accepted the idea of abductions, we spent many years trying to get the license plate number on the getaway car without having figured out what the crime was.
Right.
So UFO sightings are not necessary, and are not necessary for someone to have had these experiences.
All right. On the wild card line, you're on the air with Bud Hopkins. Good evening. Where are you calling from, please?
Good evening. This is Fritz from Los Angeles.
Los Angeles. Yes. Okay, Fritz. Go ahead.
Now to a very serious, sensitive subject about the alien. Way back in 1965, I learned about two alien federations on a cosmic doorstep. Now, the kind ones with a democratic, utopian, free will belief, and the not-so-kind ones with a socialistic, I'm your leader, you will follow me system. What I want to say is that for hundreds of years there has been a great conflict over who will connect with this solar system. Now, my question to Bud is, have you heard new research running into this conflict about the two alien races out there who want to seat this leg over the Earth sooner or later?
All right, thanks, Fritz. Well, we've got the left and the right in this country. It's kind of a question about extragalactic politics. So.
I would say that what's been described here is essentially, with all due respect to Fritz, it sounds to be like the kind of projection that we get from people who want to put this in the duality of gods and devils, gods and demons, and so forth, that I was talking about earlier before. I haven't seen in the 18 years I've been doing this kind of research, I haven't seen any sign that we have different groups doing specifically different things.
Hmm.
Now, we have different physical types described from time to time, but they very often are seen in the same ship doing the same kind of work with human beings that I've been describing.
Do you think that they are in contact with each other, aware of each other, or could we, are we being simultaneously contacted or sporadically contacted by many different groups and different origins?
Very hard question to answer, Art. What I said, though, essentially is, as an example, in one California case, the woman reported small gray figures with huge heads and black eyes, and a tall figure that was more insect-like with huge eyes. People have made associations with the praying mantis look, etc.
Right.
And other in that same ship was a relatively speaking normal human being, but they were all cooperating in these genetic experiments, as I've been describing. So it would seem that we don't have different groups doing different things. I suspect that, although we have no idea where the place of origin of these figures are or whatnot, there doesn't seem to be a different groups doing different projects.
Kind of a consortium, then.
Yeah, it would seem to be.
All right. On the first-time caller line, you're on the air with Bud Hopkins. Good evening.
Well, good evening. I can't believe I got through.
You have. Where are you calling from?
This is Bill in Albuquerque.
Yes, Bill.
And I wanted to ask Mr. Hopkins if he's the one that wrote Missing Time. I read that book, and I forgot it completely. Is he with the alien?
You mean you had a missing memory about a book, right?
Yeah, about your book. No, my question is brief. I want to know if you think that we have experimental aircraft that flies as fast as the speed of light.
All right. All right.
Mr. Bell's guess.
I would doubt that very seriously. I'm not a scientist, but I would doubt very seriously if we have anything that remotely approaches the speed of light. I think that there are undoubtedly aircraft under... in the planning stages, advanced aircraft of one sort or another. And also, there is evidence that has come up, actually, in Nevada and so forth, that would suggest that perhaps there's been some reverse engineering of crashed UFOs,
right,
which would suggest an attempt to try to get something to work. But the idea that we've got anything that can go near the speed of light, that if somebody had that, NASA would be out of business and somebody would be making zillions of dollars at it and so on. So,
what about modes of travel, Bud? I've heard a lot of people talk about the bending of time and space and a leap across that bend. Have you heard a lot about that?
There are lots of theories of that sort, and we really don't know what to make of it. I mean, I don't. As I say, leave that kind of speculation to other people. I'd rather stay with the data and away from heavy speculation. It's fun to do, but we know that this is going on in the lives of many, many millions of people, actually. How they get here, how they travel, where they're coming from. I mean, the idea, for instance, that they are necessarily locked into a planetary system somewhere is not necessarily true. I mean, it's highly possible, since we have had up in space a Skylab at one point, and space stations are going to be built by us within not too long a period, orbiting Skylabs, and one could imagine that an environment could have been constructed, and it could be movable through space, and so they might not be tied down to a planet. Who knows?
All right, good. Well, I think that's why you're so highly regarded. You don't, on a moment's notice or a second's notice, leap into the unknown.
We don't. Yes,
yeah,
we don't know.
Good. All right, good evening. On the toll-free line, you're on the air with Bud Hopkins. Where are you calling from, please?
Lawrence Laboratories, Livermore, California.
Very good.
Well, I'd like to contribute by helping Bud Hopkins and your audience understand the nature and the origin of UFOs.
All right, sir. Are you on a speakerphone? And if you are, could you pick up the telephone?
Well, I can't do that because I'm on an unsecured area and I don't want my
coworkers
to know tonight.
That's just fine. Then go ahead. We'll put up with it.
Just before Einstein passed away in the 50s, he was working on the time continuum theory and trying to explain it. UFOs are simply our descendant scientists from the future who are visiting us from all points in the future and studying mankind without interference.
And on what basis do you conclude that?
Well, Lawrence Laboratories in Berkeley is working on some of the projects.
Well,
the
idea of time traveling, of course, has been brought up many, many times as a theory, and I don't see that really changes anything, frankly.
I'm really taking a chance in even talking about
this. I understand, and you are giving us news. Can you give us some idea of what technologies you're talking about, please?
Well, the different crafts that you see are simply the different time machines, modes of travel machines that are from all different points in the future. They're simply scientists who are coming back with a policy of non-interference, studying the history of mankind. That's why they're taking DNA samples to the future to find out what has gone wrong with mankind in the future.
That's quite incredible. And
they're not extraterrestrials. They're from right here.
They're from right here.
That's why we see ships, as you call them, materialize and dematerialize, because they're simply going in and out of time.
The issues, the descriptions, of course, here of time traveling, I mean, it fits one of the modes of explanation of the UFO phenomenon that we've had for a long, long time, along with, you know, ideas of interdimensionality and so forth. So what you're saying is a theory that's been around a long time. The news would be if you can say officially that this is some kind of government, that Lawrence Livermore Laboratories is working on something.
There is a point in the future where mankind learns to travel in time.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's...
And it's less than 200 years.
Uh-huh. Well, the issue would be if some kind of statement could be made that would be official about this, that would be big news.
Maybe this caller would like to comment on the paradox problem, since you seem familiar with...
Well, there is no paradox if there's non-interference.
All right, good enough. All right, I've got a run, caller.
Well, there is, of course, an amazing amount of interference. Lives are being interfered with daily. Suicides have resulted in this. In other words, the interference is extraordinary. So it isn't a question of, let's say, deliberate interference in the sense that governments are being changed or altered or something, but lives are being altered on a vast scale. I don't feel it's possible to say there's been no interference.
But that was a remarkable call. Would you like that person to contact you privately?
Well, I would like to hear more. Yes, absolutely. And he could that address could be given. I would like to talk to him about it. As I say, the theory has been around for a long, long time. The question is whether or not there's some kind of official statement coming from... from a research scientist.
Absolutely. All right,
but that's the news.
Yes, that might be big news. But
yep.
Hold on, we've got a couple of things to do. Let's get those done. And let me give Bud's address. Write simply to IF Box 30233, New York, New York 10011. Did you get that? IF Box 30233, New York, 10011. And we'll be back to Bud Hopkins in just a moment. I want you to know it.
Okay.
All right. Hello there. On the toll-free line, you're on the air with Bud Hopkins. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Grants Pass, Oregon.
Yes, K-O-P-E.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Hello there.
Hello there.
I find this absolutely fascinating.
Good.
Who am I speaking to?
This is Bud Hopkins.
Have you heard of the Sumerian story of how humans came to Earth?
This is you're talking about the ancient astronaut work, and this is Sitchin's work and so forth?
Yes, about the two brothers who came down from a 12th planet. Their father was the leader, and his name was phonetically written as a star. One of the brothers had a staff with a snake on it.
Yeah, this answer you've gotten from Sitchin's books, is that right?
Some of them, yes.
Yeah,
and
right.
Some of the ancient writings of the Sumerians.
Right.
I find this absolutely fascinating, and I find it also plausible. Do you? Since they took the fertilized egg of a human being here on Earth and re-implanted it in the egg of the female astronaut, mm-hmm. It seems to me so modern in its concept, then they wouldn't have any idea that this was possible.
Right.
All right,
well,
thank you. We're way short on time. It's almost mythology.
Essentially, I hesitate to ever speculate on ancient astronaut issues. There's so much going on. I've had two people call me not too long ago in the past month. Two people call me after they had been returned from an abduction that had ended within about a minute or two from their phone call to me.
Mm-hmm.
And to worry about the Sumerians at this point in my life is, seems a long way away. I'll leave that to the historian.
All right, Bud, we're at the bottom of the hour. Almost, it's almost mythology, isn't it?
Yes, it really is.
All right, Bud Hopkins is my guest. This is Dreamland on a Sunday night. I'm Art Bell. If you'd like to join us, pick up a telephone. I know it's very busy, but keep trying. You will get through. You're listening to the CBC Network.
This is a pre-recorded, previously broadcast program.
From the Kingdom of Nine, we continue with your calls on Dreamland with Art Bell. Call Art now, toll-free at 1-800-618-8255. 1-800-618-CALK. First-time callers, area code 702-727-1222. 702-727-1222. Or the wildcard line at area code 702-727-1295. 727-1295 in the 702 area code. Now again, here's Art Bell.
And Bud Hopkins, good evening, everybody. An unusual opportunity for you to talk to what I think most of us consider to be our nation's premier UFO investigator, Bud Hopkins. Bud, are you still there?
I certainly am. I'd like to make a comment here. Your point was the man was on a speakerphone a minute ago on the Lawrence Livermore call.
Well, when I first heard him, I thought it was a speakerphone, and it may have been, and it also sounded like a portable because I heard it kind of whishing around a little bit.
I see. What did he say it was?
What do you mean?
I forgot what he said, what kind of phone it was. I'm a little suspicious of the call, frankly.
I'm glad you had a chance to think about it. You thought it was perhaps not real at all.
People don't tend to call and say, I'm calling from Lawrence Livermore Laboratory, to tell you the truth.
It's true.
If someone is from a very highly secure area making a phone call and having his voice go out and so forth with apparently sensitive material, it's not the sort of thing that you announce on them.
It is true. We're talking careers here.
Yes, exactly. It's much more likely to say I'm a truck driver who stopped at a truck stop here, but I have this information.
Yeah.
This is what I have heard or something. Anyway, we can move on, but I just wanted to say for the audience, I may be doing this gentleman an injustice, but I'm not so sure about it.
Let's see what you get in the mail.
Okay.
All right. On the toll-free line, you're on the air with Bud Hopkins. Good evening.
Hi, I'd like to...
All right, hold on, sir. Don't do anything yet. Turn off your radio first. That's number one.
Okay.
All right, now tell us where you're calling from.
All right, my name is Eric, and I'm calling from Eugene, Oregon.
Eugene, Oregon. All right, go ahead.
And I'm calling to find out, are you familiar with Al Bielek and his time travel experiments?
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm.
And how likely are they right now? How likely do you think that they are?
All right, thank you. That's a question about the credibility of Al Bielek.
Yes. Well, that's a hard question for me to answer because I'm not as familiar with it as I should be. I'm aware of it. I know that he has devoted a lot of time to writing about it, lecturing about it, and I would prefer to just let this one kind of dangle. I don't like to step out and pontificate in areas that I'm not as sure of my knowledge and information as I should be.
All right, let's
this one go.
All right, let's go away from Al Bielek, though, and let me ask you about the Philadelphia experiment. Did something, in your view, Bud, happen?
My general sense is that no, it did not happen in the way it was originally reported. Now, of course, Mr. Moore, who wrote the book about the Philadelphia experiment with Berlitz, I believe, together, has since felt that the evidence is not really compelling that such an event took place. That was a long time ago, and obviously every single one of these issues such as that amazing event, the disappearance and reconstitution of a ship and so forth, if something like that were feasible, I think we would have used this in one way or another, militarily or commercially, whatnot. One of the problems, of course, with all of these ideas of which verge on conspiracy theory about super duper government military gear or material that could have military usage, is that people forget we went through a war in the Gulf War recently, and of course we had no real special equipment in that war that gave us the ending we would have liked to have had. If we had had some really incredible equipment, I think right now, as I've always said, Saddam Hussein would be sitting in a jail cell right now next to Noriega, and we would still have Bush as president, we would still have the head of the CIA as the head of CIA, the Joint Chiefs of Staff would still be in place, and so on. None of that happened.
All right, well, that's a really good point. What about the other major event in fairly distant history, the one in New Mexico that Representative Schiff is now going to cause the GAO to apparently investigate?
Well, that's a very different issue, because that has to do with alien technology, not military technology, such as the Philadelphia experiment would indicate. This is an alien event. I have absolute... Now, after many years of studying the evidence and noticing more evidence as it's accumulated, some very good research. Don Schmidt's been doing wonderful research on that. So is Stan Friedman, a number of people. I think that I definitely feel that something crashed, a UFO crashed, or two, perhaps. There was a speculation that two collided. Bodies were recovered, material was recovered, and I have no doubt about that at this point.
All right. Very good. And on the toll-free line, you're on the air with Bud Hopkins. Good evening.
Hi, Art. This is Brandy in Bakersfield.
Brandy in Bakersfield. Hi, Brandy.
Hi. I was disappointed because baseball preempted this show, so I've only been listening since 8:30.
Oh, well, we're sorry about that.
Oh, I mean, it's not your fault. The people at KZR. But anyway, I wanted to say it's a pleasure to speak with you, Bud. I just wanted to ask you, since you've researched this for many years, do you think that demonology plays any type of role in these abductions? And also, is there any way that Whitley Strieber could also come on the show?
All right.
Get off the air. Thanks, Art.
All right, thank you. And of course there is. I'll answer the second question. Demonology, I'm sure you get that one a lot, Bud.
Yeah. Well, again, as I've tried to explain, we have a basic need to kind of shove the whole... alien phenomenon, abduction phenomenon, UFO phenomenon, into the idea of gods or devils. And I do not connect this with any kind of theological beings, demons, just as I don't connect it with theological beings, angels. I think that this is a very distinct phenomenon. Now, I'm not going to say that I don't believe that there are necessarily gods and devils in the real world. I don't want to get into a theological hassle here. We'll get a million calls from people consigning me to hell for my opinion, so I will stay
right
away from that. But I definitely feel that this is its own business. It is not connected with demons. There are very, very possible mistaking identity situations where people feel the child is possessed of a devil or whatnot who is having abduction experiences, and it might be kind of hard for some people to tell. I had a case where a woman here in New York, her parents were rather not very well educated, first generation Italian family, and they used to bring in the priest every now and then with holy water to bless the apartment because these strange little men with big black eyes were coming through the walls.
Oh boy.
And what else to do? They must be demons. So there is some confusion here, but I think it is a separate phenomenon.
Well, let me turn the question around. Is that one of the main reasons that we're not told about all this because of the reaction in religious circles?
Well, I mean, that is certainly possible, that it creates a lot of problems for religious people, but it is not necessarily an insoluble problem. We have to remember, because, and I should mention that I have worked with a number of born-again Christians who are also abductees, and there was a problem for them of reconciling what was happening to them to their abduction experiences.
Sure.
And as I pointed out, you know, many years ago, it was believed back in the time of Galileo that if the idea was accepted that we were not the center of the universe, that we were simply in a planet going around the sun amongst many other suns, then that would mean the end of religion. And because it was against the Bible, it was this, that, and the other thing. And that was what the theologians of the time believed. And, of course, now virtually everybody understands that we are just a planet going in a particular solar system, but that has not damaged religion. Religion managed to, theologians managed to make sense of this and harmonize this new information with the Bible, and Christianity has not suffered as a result. And I think the same thing can happen with this.
All right, good. Well, I want to get off course here. On the first-time caller line, you're on the air with Bud Hopkins. Good evening. Where are you calling from?
Spokane, Washington.
Spokane, Washington. All right.
Mr. Hopkins.
Yes, sir.
Yes. How many of these abduction cases were preceded by a red light, a ball of red light coming through the wall first, like a probe?
Well, many, many people who have had abduction experiences at one point or another have noticed unusual lights or balls of light in the room with them, coming through the wall, coming down the hall, whatnot. Often people describe these lights as acting as if they're intelligent, as if they're looking at you.
Now, right.
I'm curious about, since you raised the question, that you must have had an experience along these lines.
Yes, sir. Much like the young lady related about 15 minutes ago where she was paralyzed.
Yeah, well, that's a classic account. Yeah. What was your experience, sir?
Well, I woke up. I called before and talked to Linda Howe about this and also
uh-huh.
Mr. Bell.
Uh-huh.
But I woke up to a droning, whirring noise in the room, just whirring, you know, a mechanical droning.
Uh-huh.
That woke me up. And I looked up and he had a gigantic crucifix on the wall, and the ball of light came out the crucifix, and it just pulsated there about the size of a baseball.
Uh-huh.
And then it tracked the ceiling, went over the ceiling, went down her side of the room, and I tried to wake her up. And my girlfriend's really light sleeper. I said, wake up, please wake up, look at this. And she wouldn't wake up.
Yeah.
And when it got on her back, it pulsated for 30 minutes on her back, and she was sleeping on her stomach.
Mm.
It then proceeded off her back onto my chest. Now, once it got on my chest, I couldn't scream out no more.
Yeah.
I couldn't move. I started sweating because I was fighting it. I was trying to sit up and
understand.
But I could not move. All my eyeballs could do was go round and round.
Yeah.
Next thing I passed out and went to sleep.
Yeah.
I woke up about an hour and a half later, and the ball of light was leaving my chest, going off my body to the floor, back on the crucifix where it just pulsated for about a minute.
Uh-huh.
And it just went into the crucifix and out the wall, and
right.
It took me about a half an hour to recover before I could get up.
Right.
Now, but I was going to ask you, have you ever had anybody, do a study? Well, my last name is Simon.
Uh-huh.
And have you ever had anybody do a study to see how many people with religious last names, are being tracked and like Abraham?
I honestly,
right,
Mr. Simon, I don't think there's any reason to think that any particular person is being singled out for this because of their religious beliefs, their last name, or anything of that sort. I mean, this is a worldwide phenomenon. We're getting this in areas where there are no Christians to speak up. For instance, these things are occurring in China, in the Orient, the backwaters of Africa, South America, and so forth, with people with very, very definitely non-Christian beliefs. This is not something that is limited to people with a particular religious background. I think that's a coincidence in your case, sir, but what you described, though, certainly seems like something that should be looked into. So, again, if you'd like to write, I can put you in touch with somebody. Perhaps near you.
Boy, the MO is beginning to sound familiar now, isn't it?
Well, Art, let me tell you that when we did the Roper survey, one of the questions we asked was, have you ever, and these were not beliefs, these were, have you had these experiences? One of the questions they asked was, have you ever seen unusual lights or balls of light in a room with you, which neither you nor anyone else could explain? And actually, 8% of the American people said yes to that, which is extraordinary.
That is extraordinary.
So even if you say that's four times too many, say, but to cut it down, mistakes or, people misread things, you're still dealing with a very high percentage. And even if it's, as we found with the Roper survey, using five basic indicator questions, one of which dealt with the paralysis, just as both of these people have explained, have described it very eloquently, periods of missing time where they have no idea where they were, how it happened, or why it happened, and so on. With these five questions, we came out with 2% of the American people said yes to 4 out of 5 of these questions, which would indicate if they are abductees, and it's certainly likely, we're dealing with, say, perhaps 5 million Americans who have been through this.
That's a lot of occurrences, but hold on just a moment. We'll come right back to you. Fire back to the telephones, and on the toll-free line, you're on the air with Bud Hopkins. Where are you calling from?
San Jose, California.
San Jose, good.
Hi, Art. Hello, Bud. This is Tim from San Jose.
Well, Tim, how are you?
I'm fine. How have you been?
Very well.
I just wanted to share something with you. yesterday morning, my daughter and her mom had an experience. They had a visitation.
Uh-huh.
Her mom woke up with an extremely sore throat, nauseous, nasals were stinging, disoriented. She had a blue fluid coming from her nose, one nostril.
Oh, boy.
She threw up, and she called me. I was curious if you'd heard of any sort of blue fluid with other cases like that.
Well, this coming from a nostril. Was there any way of saving any fluid?
She wasn't thinking of that at the time.
Yeah. We have a lot of different strange fluids from various bodily orifices which have created stains, and we have saved the material. It's very hard to analyze some of this stuff if you don't have much of it, and if it's very embedded in fabric, it's quite expensive to do it. But things like that have been reported more often, actually, kind of a brown fluid.
Yeah.
How about your daughter?
She seemed to be okay. We took her to an emergency pediatrician just to make sure. I tried to share this phenomenon with him. I showed him the pamphlet that you and the Bigelow Foundation wrote. Unusual personal experiences, I think it is. He wasn't receptive at all. He laughed about it, shrugged it off, and didn't even want to take the pamphlet. Well,
did she report anything specifically happening, her recollections, the daughter?
No, she had no recollection of the event.
But was anything physical?
Not to her, but to her mother, yeah.
More to her mother than to her, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, let's hope she wasn't taken.
No.
But, well, thanks very much, Tim. I'm... You know, sorry this happened. These have been extremely difficult situations to handle for a family, but I think you're doing a fine job.
Would you recommend somebody like that, Bud, investigate further, contact somebody, find out if, in fact, the child or the mother or both were taken?
Well, I certainly would. The mother has worked with a psychologist in the area who's very, very helpful. Done a very good job, and since I know Tim, there are various people in the area, including another pediatrician and others who could be helpful. We do have quite a group. This is generally in the San Francisco area. We have some very good people out there. Tim has got some support, which is very helpful to him. And
Bud, is there any geographic area that is visited more frequently, apparently, or is it just simply completely random?
It's very, very hard to tell because obviously what you hear about is only what the press or letter writers or whatever are willing to present. And of course, if it's a very conservative community where this is frowned upon, you're not going to get people talking about it this openly. For instance, in New York City, I have people reporting these experiences who are, let's say, white middle class people, etc. I have quite a few African American background people and Hispanics, but very few Orientals. And it isn't that I think this isn't happening to Oriental people, but I think that in such numbers, I think that there's a reticence, perhaps, as a societal norm in that particular group to talk about this sort of thing.
Some sort of cultural bias.
Exactly. So if you go to, for instance, a Bible Belt a town in the South, there might be a lot going on, but it might be attributed to demons, or it might be something that people feel hesitant to talk about it. And so you simply would think, well, we have a big blank in this area. We're not getting any reports. And that might not be the case.
No, that's a good point. On the wild card line, you're on the air with Bud Hopkins. Good evening.
Yes, good evening, Art. Fascinating show this evening, because I'm curious, going back to when you talked about a lot of this happens to children when they're younger, have you ever discovered that this was either a cover-up for child abuse, or that child abusers have used this guise or for UFO abductions?
All right, or Bud, the other way around.
Well, that's a very interesting point, and I'm glad you brought that up, because this has been... let's say the explanation du jour of many groups of skeptics on the subject, that the essential point is people they believe are being sexually abused and are somehow blanking out that memory and substituting for it a fantasy where they bring in aliens, which is an issue they can handle better than the fact that it was old Uncle Sid or Aunt Martha or whatever, whoever who did the abusing. And of course, if that were the case, we would expect to find amongst abductees a very low level of people reporting sexual abuse. And in fact, from the work that was done by Dr. Kenneth Ring and other people with abductees, we get just as high a percentage of abductees reporting sexual abuse by normal humans in the bad old way as we get with people who have not had abductions. So there's no sense that then these people are, as a group, are substituting abduction experiences. What's since they're remembering the child abuse too. What's more, and I'll give you a very quick and very sad story, I have a number of cases like this. In this case, told me by the mother, her little boy, and this is rather graphic and I'm sorry about this, but her little boy at the age of, I think he was five or four, she was divorced, he was having, the husband had visiting rights and the little boy would stay with him on the weekend. And the mother said, who was a registered nurse, she found her little boy in his bedroom with a screwdriver, which he was trying to insert in his rectum.
Oh, my God.
And he told her, when she was, of course, horrified, he said, that's what the man does. He uses a tool or something like this. Well, at any rate, she naturally assumed sexual abuse on the part of her husband. Who vehemently denied it, but she went to court and got a court order barring her husband permanently any visiting rights whatsoever with the child. And the husband moved away, and of course, within a couple of months, the child was again talking, and he had some damage to the tissues, rectal tissues. He said the men had come in again, and they had big black eyes, and they were scared, he was frightened, and they had used some instrument there. And plus a whole other range of things he was describing.
I wonder how many times Uncle Sid is in jail because of an abduction.
Well, I can assure you that it must have happened, because I have many cases where, a number of cases, one in which a woman had thought that she had been raped by her father at the age of 12. And that she had harbored these feelings all her life, never accused him, he never really changed his behavior, but the description of the rape scene, which I can't even go into, it's very, very odd. There's nothing about it that sounds like a rape, but her father was present, and as we explored the experience, it seems that it was an abduction of the two of them. And at one point, he was in the ship without clothes, as she was in the ship without clothes, and things are being done to the two of them. So it was interpreted as a rape. But I can assure you that just even the questioning from what she remembered consciously had nothing about it that suggested violence. She remembered that she was lying down, that she was unable to move, that she had no clothes on whatsoever. There was no sense of any violence or struggle. She felt that something was inserted into her body. There was no sense of another figure, of another body in relation to hers, etc. That her father was standing off to one side, unmoving.
Nonetheless, but it isn't really a defense you'd use anyway, is it? It wasn't me, it was the grave.
No, that it wouldn't hold any water. And I really do feel, now see, there may be some cases. I would not ever say that there aren't any cases where what the gentleman suggested might not have happened, where somebody could have invented some sort of story. Lord knows the mind is very fertile when it comes to trying to cover up trauma and rationalize.
It is. It reaches out and tries to explain. Bud, we're at the top of the hour, so relax for about 5 minutes. We'll do one more hour.
Okay.
Bud Hopkins is my guest. Fascinating night. We'll be back with more in about five.